I'm Karen Given. The Russian Republic of Kalmykia sits near the Caspian Sea's western shore, not far from the border with Kazakhstan. It's not a popular tourist destination, but if you were to travel to Kalmykia's capital, you'd find a spectacular city within a city dedicated to one of the world's oldest games. But this unusual place comes with a controversial and deadly past. Here's Only a Game's Gary Wallach.
In 2002, writer Daniel Calder visited Kalmykia with a couple of friends. On the drive from the airport to the capital city of Elista, they passed public service posters that lined the road, holdovers from Kalmykia's Soviet past.
Call your parents. And I remember there was like a lot of adverts that said, we buy hair. There's another one that said, play chess.
Calder says there was little information about Elista online or in travel brochures, so he wasn't exactly sure what he'd find there. But after a few days of wandering around, he found what he was looking for, a place called Chess City.
And there was kind of a gate that you passed through. It kind of looked a little bit like a modern housing site. Clean, shiny houses, not tower blocks or this kind of grim, depressing Soviet architecture. It was this kind of gleaming European-style subdivision with what looked like a shopping center in it, but was actually the Palace of Chess.
The Palace of Chess is a five-story structure with a modern glass facade. Its shape suggests the traditional yurt used for centuries by the formerly nomadic Kalmyk people.
There was a young couple sort of half making out on the steps when we arrived, which is really strange because it was completely abandoned. Maybe that's why they were there. So we kind of went up the steps and went through these glass doors, and there was a security guard at the door, and he was shocked, very surprised to see us. I guess he was there to protect the Palace of Chess from what wasn't clear.
The guard asked why they were there. Calder and his friends said they wanted a tour. The guard was skeptical, but after a bit of convincing, he took Calder and his friends inside.
It was really empty. It was like a ghost ship. The ground floor was just a big open space.
They walked upstairs to a gallery where they saw a photograph hanging on a wall. It was of the Palace of Chess in the late 90s when it was still under construction.
And this really familiar looking guy with a beard who was like looking at the construction site with great interest. And then I realized it was Chuck Norris.
Norris had visited Elista when Chess City was being built. Nobody seems to know exactly why he was there. Naturally, I tried to get Norris on the show, but my dreams were dashed. But back to the Palace of Chess.
It was just bizarre. It was just weird. It was really almost hallucinatory. They had these chess tables, but they didn't have any pieces. Just these like tables set up for games that were never going to be played. And then like at the very top, there was like exhibits of famous grandmasters, of famous Soviet chess players. That was it really, just kind of wandering around in this abandoned glass pyramid. A monument to an impossible dream.
That dream originated with Chess City's founder, former junior chess champion, Kirsan Ilyamzhinov.
He's an unusual character and a very controversial character. When he came of age, it was sort of in the 1980s, perestroika, when things were changing. And so he went into business, importing cars, and he made quite a lot of money. And so by the early 1990s, he was already a millionaire.
The Soviet Union fell in 1991. 2 years later, Kirsan Ilyamzhinov was elected president of Kalmykia.
We made all the kids in Kalmykia learn chess, compulsory chess lessons. He wanted chess to be an Olympic sport. He wanted 1 billion people to be playing chess.
In 1995, while still serving as the leader of Kalmykia, Ilyamzhinov was elected president of FIDE, known in English as the World Chess Federation.
And the World Chess Federation was in serious financial straits, and so they kind of looked to him to fix its financial problems and then kind of raise its profile in the world, which he applied himself to with great gusto, with this really grand vision.
Ilyamzhinov believed that chess was a force for good in the world, so he came up with a plan to create Chess City. It would feature chess-themed sculptures alongside the Buddhist temples and statues of Lenin already there. The Palace of Chess would be the city's opulent centerpiece. But the shifting sands of the Eurasian steppe make it a difficult place to build. Nobody knows exactly how much the project cost. Estimates run from $30 to $50 million. And Kalmykia is one of Europe's poorest regions.
To be honest, I cannot tell you how we got that funding.
Some claim the money was diverted from regional food subsidies. But Ilyam Zhinov believed he could boost his country's economy by attracting world-class events. He ordered the Chess City be ready in time to host the 1998 Chess Olympiad. In September of that year, the world's best chess players battled it out in the Palace of Chess. International Grandmaster Grigory Kaidanov was there as a member of the U.S. team. Kaidanov and his teammates were greeted by Kirsan Ilyam Zhinov.
It was very unusual, let's put it this way. He gave us a bag of souvenirs, which included a watch with the name Kirsan on it, and a bottle of vodka, which was called Kirsan too, and some other little things. But almost every souvenir had his name on it. So I thought it was kind of funny.
Grandmaster Nick DeFermian was also a member of that 1998 U.S. team.
We all got caviar because the Caspian Sea is there.
So you don't still have your watch or the vodka?
I believe the team used the vodka to good cause during our efforts there. The watch, no, I don't have.
The players talked with Ilyam Zhinov. He was full of stories. Some of them were unusual.
Kirsan told everyone that he was abducted by space aliens and taken up in their ship. And this is such a strange story to hear from somebody who's running many businesses, running a little country, someone in good stead with Putin. So that was a sort of strange, curious thing. Me, I was very happy to hear that Kirsan had talked to the aliens. I've seen movies like Independence Day, where the aliens come down and bomb the whole U.S. So I thought it was good to have somebody who knew them personally.
Anyway, during that same meeting with Ilyam Zhinov, DeFermian heard one of his teammates ask the president a startling question.
One of our players, Yasser Sarawan, point blank asked him if he had anything to do with the murder. And Kirsan answered, well, certainly not me. I'm a Buddhist. I don't believe in violence.
Just 3 months earlier, on July 7th, 1998, the body of Russian journalist Larissa Yudina had been found in a pond near Chess City. She had written articles questioning where the money for the project had come from. She had accused Ilyam Zhinov of corruption. Yudina's corpse had multiple knife wounds and a fractured skull.
The fact that her body was found in a pond near Chess City was a message.
That's writer J.C. Holman.
And I think the message, you know, was don't investigate this. Don't interfere with what we're trying to do.
Still, the 1998 tournament went on. Russia won gold. The U.S. took silver. 2 years later, a couple of Ilyam Zhinov's aides were convicted and jailed for Yudina's murder.
But it was never acknowledged either that he had overtly ordered that murder or that he had created the environment that made it inevitable.
Holman visited Alista not long after those convictions. He wanted to interview Kirsan Ilyam Zhinov about chess and also about Yudina's murder. One morning, he got the call to come to Ilyam Zhinov's office.
You open one door and there's another door, and then you have to open the other door. And then there's a big desk, and he had all kinds of paraphernalia to create an impression of greatness.
Russian and Kalmyk flags, Buddhist tapestries, precious stones, and a portrait of Genghis Khan.
Which was sort of like being allowed into his throne room. You know, Ilyam Zhinov is, he's not a tall guy. He's thin, but he does have a presence.
Holman asked Ilyam Zhinov about the nature of chess and what the game meant to Kalmykia and to the world.
There were 14 people sitting around a table, and we're listening to him talk. And more or less unprompted, he comes out with this idea that aliens are going to arrive and we're going to teach them chess, and this is all going to become part of some new order of the universe in some way. And nobody was going to say anything about it because he was the president.
Holman decided not to ask Ilyam Zhinov about the murder.
I'm not a journalist. You know, I was writing a travel narrative, and I felt like nothing was going to come of me confronting him about that except that he would kick me out of the country and I wouldn't get the rest of the story.
Wanting to pick up where Holman had left off, I tried contacting Ilyam Zhinov to get his side of the story. There was no response to my request for an interview. Kherson Ilyam Zhinov retired in 2010 after 17 years as president of Kalmykia. During that time, he kept company with dictators Saddam Hussein, Muammar Gaddafi, and Bashar al-Assad. Because of his associations, in 2015, the U.S. government put Ilyam Zhinov on a list of individuals considered threats to national security. Some of his business dealings also violated FIDE's code of ethics. In 2018, Ilyam Zhinov was ousted after a 23-year run as FIDE president. J.C. Holman visited Chess City 2 years after it was built, and already the Eurasian steppe had begun to creep back in. The sidewalks had started to crumble. Today, 2 decades later, the Palace of Chess remains largely empty. It's now the site of occasional minor chess tournaments and weddings. Again, Daniel Calder.
And there's still a security guard, and there's still the picture of Chuck Norris. It just stays there, just kind of slowly rotting and crumbling on the edge of the desert.
It's a fitting image for Ilyam Zhinov's failure to realize his vision of world peace and harmony through chess. J.C. Holman thinks there are lessons to be learned from all this.
It's not a new idea that we can use sport or games to try to create a sense of national identity and goodwill and prosperity. The Olympics gets used for this. Nevertheless, I think that when chess gets used for political ends, the more beautiful, artful side of it gets lost, and that Chess City might ultimately stand as a monument to what happens when you try to put something like chess to that kind of a distorted use.
As long as the Eurasian steppe doesn't claim it for good, Chess City will quietly stand as Kherson Ilyam Zhinov's expensive reminder of the frailty of human aspiration and the dangers of unchecked ambition.
That's Only a Game's Gary Wallach. J.C. Holman's book is The Chess Artist. Daniel Calder's travelogue is Lost Cosmonaut, Observations of an Anti-Tourist.